1, 2, 3.
You're listening to Sports Talk Chicago with your host, John Zagluhl.
John, I am fantastic. Thank you for having me. You got an awesome voice, man, and that was a terrific intro. You're like a pro's pro.
You know, that was the first time somebody ever said that, John. No, you're the first person to ever say anything like that. That's very interesting.
You got it, John. Anything for a fellow Chicago guy.
Well, what a great question.
That's a great question. Nobody's actually asked me that.
I like it. What a great question. I never heard that before.
Chase Utley is what? You're saying he's not a Hall of Fame candidate?
You know, it's funny. You may be the only person that I've heard make that connection.
Thank you, John, for having me. I'm doing great. By the way, you have an outstanding voice. Not sure about your face because I haven't met you, but your voice is great.
You're doing a much better job than I ever did. You've had some heavy hitters guests on too, man, so keep up the good work. But it's good to be with you, and I'm ready to talk sports.
Hello, everybody, and welcome in to Sports Talk Chicago. My name's John Zagluhl. Great to have you here on the Thursday edition of the program. Who are the Bears' quarterback options for next season? We'll explain in just a moment. Plus, a brand new interview today with Mark Schanowski. He covers the Bulls for Stadium, and he has his own podcast, the Sharpshooters Podcast. We talk with him more about the Bulls season, what to expect come next year, the rebuild, and so much more. It's a great interview, and it comes your way near the midway point of this show. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at John Z Sports and on Facebook at John Zagluhl. And if you want to listen to this show at any time in podcast form, search up Sports Talk Chicago on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and SportsTalkChicago.com. Today's show is brought to you by State Farm agent Ryan McDabbitt. Here's the deal. When you combine State Farm home and auto insurance, you save an average of $889. State Farm agent Ryan McDabbitt is ready to help you combine home and auto and save in Chicago and the surrounding suburbs. Call Ryan today at 630-796-2662. That's 630-796-2662, or visit his website, ryanismyagent.com. That's ryanismyagent.com, and make sure to mention Sports Talk Chicago. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. I want to start today with this question. Which quarterback gives the Bears the best chance to win in 2021? Don't worry, we're not talking about incumbents here. No Mitch. No Nick Foles, no Tyler Bray. We're talking about guys the Bears could go out and get. Free agent, trade, doesn't matter. Now, I will preface this by saying there's only one quarterback who I believe the Bears could go out and get today who'd be better than Mitch or Nick, the status quo. That simple. He'll be on the list. But that's it. The other four quarterbacks I mentioned here today would be the same. They'd be adequate. They wouldn't really make a big difference to me. So I want you to keep that in mind. That said, here is my top five quarterback list. Number five is Tyrod Taylor. Yep, Tyrod Taylor. I know. You might be thinking, this guy's a backup, John. What the hell are you talking about? I respond with this. Who has the best touchdown to interception ratio in NFL history? Oh yeah, that's right, Tyrod Taylor. Who could run for 500 yards in a season? Even more. Tyrod Taylor. Who led the Bills to their first playoff appearance in 19 years? Tyrod Taylor. He's not a bad quarterback. The media may tell you he's horrible. He got benched for Justin Herbert. No, he didn't. He was hurt. And the doctors in Los Angeles screwed with him. He's a good quarterback. When he started in Buffalo, 3 years of about 3,000 passing yards, 15 to 20 touchdowns, 4 to 7 picks. That's it. If you're looking for a guy who makes good decisions all the time, pick Tyrod Taylor. All of you who hate Mitch, who watch me, know Mitch makes bad throws. Picks in the end zone, I can't stand it. Tyrod won't do it. Not at all. And he's mobile. Extends plays with his legs. And never turns the ball over. Disciplined quarterback. I think he'd work with the Bears. I think he'd go 8-8. Maybe better. He wouldn't be a bad pickup. I wouldn't be opposed at all. But a lot of people have a negative opinion of him. They say it wasn't Tyrod, it was the Bills' defense who carried them. Oh, Tyrod got benched by Baker Mayfield. And for Justin Herbert. And both those cases, Tyrod was brought in to be a bridge quarterback. That's unfair to him. If the Bears came up and told him, let's say they signed him and said, you are the guy, I'd be interested to see how he performs. No interim tag, no Mitch is behind you, he'll come in after two games. Just, Tyrod, do your thing. I think we'd see his time from the Bills reenacted here. That means 3,000 passing yards. That means 500 rushing yards. That means about 20 touchdowns and about 5 picks. I take that every single day of the week. He's on a bargain right now. Won't cost too much money. And he'd be a good idea for the Bears to look at least via free agency. Number 4, Ryan Fitzpatrick. He didn't do bad this year. If it wasn't for him, the Dolphins wouldn't be in the playoff chase. Went 4-3 in 7 starts, 9 games total. This is what tells you he meant a lot to that team. Tua Tagovailoa was drafted to be the guy. Yet down the stretch, when the Dolphins needed wins, when they needed help to make the playoffs, they would take Tua out of games and put in Ryan Fitzpatrick. Their top pick, the great quarterback from Alabama, they take him out to put in Fitzpatrick to play. Because Fitzpatrick gave them the best chance to win. Now this year, 13 touchdowns, 8 picks, 2,100 passing yards, and 96 quarterback rating. Not a bad quarterback. Not a bad option for the Bears if they want to go the veteran route. I would sign him to a 1-year deal. That's it. See what he could do. And the one positive is if you keep Mitch Trubisky, let's say, Fitzpatrick won't be deterred. He dealt with that this year and performed. He dealt with the team's top quarterback right behind him, ready to take him over, and he did fine under that pressure. So mentally, he'd be able to stomach having Trubisky behind him or having another quarterback competition or having Nagy tell him, hey, Trubisky's right here. He will come in if you can't perform. He's able to do it. Seasoned veteran, been around the league for a long time. He's had some success, mostly failures, but some success. And for 1 year, why not sign him? Like Tyrod, he'd cost nothing, virtually nothing. And who knows? Maybe Fitzpatrick throws for 4,000 passing yards if he plays every game and leads the Bears to a playoff appearance. It's possible. It might be unlikely, but it is possible. It could happen. If he could do that with the Dolphins, he could do it with the Bears too. I could see it happening. Number 3, Dak Prescott. Now, I know money would be a problem. The Bears would have to trade for him too and have to give up a lot of picks. But not a bad quarterback. Not a bad quarterback at all. Compared to what the Bears have now, if we're talking about statistics, Dak would do great, just like Matthew Stafford. Remember, I said last week, Matthew Stafford puts up numbers, he just can't win. Dak Prescott puts up numbers, but he hasn't won yet. Dak this past season, 9 touchdowns, 4 picks. Then he got hurt, obviously. The year before, 4,900 passing yards and 30 touchdowns. There are two concerns with Dak. Number one, his injury. What will he be like when he comes back? We don't know. That's why he's number three. We don't really know what to expect. Could be old Dak all over again. Could be new Dak. And he won't be as good like RG3 when he got hurt. We don't know. Secondly, the one big issue with Dak is that he needs the right team around him. Dak did great when Ezekiel Elliott played, when his line was good, when Amari Cooper was his number one target. How would he do here? With David Montgomery, possibly no Allen Robinson, and a beat-up offensive line. Quite a difference from where he was in Dallas. That's the big issue. The injury thing isn't even that big of a deal, really, compared to this. He needs every single right piece around him to succeed. If he has it, he'll do great. But if he doesn't, he'll be an average quarterback at best. That's why I never blame the Cowboys nor anybody for talking about paying him $40 million and giving him this extension. It's smoke and mirrors. He needs to have the right team around him to win. And to even play up to par, he needs a safety net. He needs a number one receiver. He needs Ezekiel Elliott to catch passes in the flat and to run. He's a high-tech Mitch Trubisky. He is. He's better numerically, but he's the same in the sense that he needs the right pieces. He needs a team around him to succeed, just like Mitch. He's not like Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, all these great quarterbacks where they need nothing. They'll find ways to win themselves, Russell Wilson. Dak needs something. He needs support. And in the Bears' case, they really can't give that to him. And the Bears would give up a lot to get him, and they'd have to pay money. So it's unrealistic. It's possible, but it's unrealistic for the Bears. And I don't see him working out here in Chicago. That said, they might get him anyway, and we'll have to see. Number two, Matthew Stafford. Yes. I put Stafford above Dak Prescott because we know Stafford is healthy. As of right now, we do. No season-ending injury. He's going to be the same person he was this past season. Now, what does that mean for the Bears? Nothing. Matthew Stafford's a great quarterback, but again, like Dak, if he doesn't have a team around him, he's not going to win. That's not a knock on Stafford. It's a knock on the team he's been on. He's not going to win with nothing around him. And the Bears have nothing. The Bears have nothing to give. I've never understood the infatuation with Matthew Stafford. He's a 5,000-yard passer. Wow. Okay. Great. He had Calvin Johnson, by the way. And the Lions did nothing anyways. He's a 72-90 quarterback. Wins aren't a quarterback stat. Well, to me, they kind of are, because if you throw for 5,000 yards but go 4-12, what good does that do for your team? We have to think here. Matthew Stafford, great quarterback. Best quarterback in Lions history. That said, how would he do here? Really, how would he do? The Bears would probably go 7-9, 8-8. And that'd be it. And Stafford would maybe throw for 4,000 yards. As I said last week, if you're looking for a franchise record-holding quarterback, bring in Stafford. Just like the Bears brought in Jay Cutler. Jay Cutler, statistically, is the greatest quarterback in Bears franchise history. That doesn't mean the Bears won under him. That doesn't mean the Bears won games, won Super Bowls, went everywhere. No. It just meant that he put up a lot of numbers and passed the ball a lot, and that's it. That's what you'll get with Matthew Stafford. If you're looking for franchise records and for huge passing yard numbers, bring him in. If you're looking for actual wins and an actual team-wide improvement under him, you're not going to get it. That's the big flaw for Matthew Stafford. And then number one, Deshaun Watson. Deshaun Watson is the only quarterback on this list who'd be a real upgrade and who could lead the Bears to a better season than Mitch or Nick. Now, I know he went 4-12 this year. That scares me. It proves that just because you lead the league in passing yards means nothing for your team. And I'm still skeptical of him coming here. I doubt he wants to do it. Why would he? Why would he take that step back and go from Houston, a dysfunctional organization, to come here? Highly doubt it'll happen. But he would make a difference. He would. I'm not saying a big one. I think him and Mitch would be similar, Watson a bit better. And the only reason I say that is because there's no team here. The Bears don't have a team. They don't. They have Matt Nagy still calling plays. David Montgomery, good running back. No receivers, no O-line. When your number one receiver could be Darnell Mooney, you've got a problem. And that's not a knock on Mooney, but the fact is, he's not a number one receiver yet. Not yet. He had 600 receiving yards. That's not number one receiver worthy. He's a good number two right now. The Bears need a one. And they don't have it. And if they bring in a quarterback via free agency, they're going to have to pay him. They may have no money for Allen Robinson. That's the other concern. So I think Watson would make the most sense from this list. He'd be the most improved. He'd lead the Bears to a better record, no question. The rest of them, though, have issues, have concerns, have holes. And Mitch Trubisky and Nick Foles are already here. Now, you might be wondering about some of my omissions. I did not include Carson Wentz nor Sam Darnold. Here's why. The Bears don't need another project. They don't need another Mitch Trubisky. They have one already. Look, I've always believed in Wentz. I think he had a bad year. I think he could improve and bounce back. But the Bears don't need to take that sort of a risk. They don't. They've done it already. They're going to do it again. That is not the guy to bring in. Same with Darnold. You know, it's so funny. Everybody sits here and tears down Mitch. Bad decision maker. Can't read defenses. Too many picks. You guys would have a field day if Wentz or Darnold started for the Bears next year. You'd be begging Mitch Trubisky to make a comeback. You would. They both have talent, just like Mitch has talent, but they throw many more picks. And they're essentially broken. Everybody says Mitch is broken. Get him out of here. Why bring in another broken quarterback? Come on, you're better than that. You know better. So no, they're not on my list. So some would say, what about Jared Goff? No, not on my list. Jared Goff, like Wentz, like Darnold, project, huge project. Jared Goff could barely stay afloat with the Rams under Sean McVay. What would happen if he came to the Bears and played under Matt Nagy? I can't even imagine. I would guess 15 touchdowns, 20 picks. Easy. Easy. So let's cool it a bit with that. Out of all these players that I've mentioned and talked about, the only one who'd make a legitimate difference is Deshaun Watson. Everybody else would be similar, maybe just a bit better than Mitch and even Nick Foles. I'll give him credit too. Nick Foles is an established veteran. He's done some good things in the NFL. How would Tyrod Taylor, Ryan Fitzpatrick, even Dak Prescott to an extent, outplay Nick Foles? It really wouldn't. It'd be about the same. Dak I include in that list because he's hurt and because we all know Dak needs a perfect situation. And then when it comes to comparing all those guys to Mitch, only Watson would be better. Stafford wouldn't be. No, he wouldn't be. Stafford can't win with that team. What makes you think he's going to win here in Chicago with just as bad a team? Let's think. So, we'll have to wait and see what the Bears end up doing. A lot of time to go. Maybe more names will pop up. I didn't include Aaron Rodgers because that's a farce. He's not going anywhere. But that's what I think right now. The top five Bears quarterbacks who could lead them to more success other than Mitch and Nick: Tyrod Taylor, Ryan Fitzpatrick, Dak Prescott, Matthew Stafford, and Deshaun Watson. That's it. We'll have to see how it plays out. Let me know what you think, too. Comment on the video. Comment on social media, at John Z Sports. Find me everywhere. Let me know what you think. I'm curious. Who else would be a good choice for the Bears besides those five? Would there be a big difference between getting one of them and keeping Mitch or keeping Foles or keeping both? I'd love to hear your take. Let me know. More to come here on Sports Talk Chicago. My interview with Mark Schanowski comes up next, so stay tuned. Hey, do you want to make some money this weekend? What if I told you I could offer you $250 free to bet on any game you want? Here's what you have to do. Go to sportstalkchicago.com/cash. sportstalkchicago.com/cash. You must be 21 plus. You must be an Illinois resident. You could bet $250 free on any game you want for this upcoming weekend. Super Bowl's coming up in 2 weeks. You can put down some money now. College basketball and the NBA. A great opportunity in each case to put down so much money and win a whole lot more back. That's sportstalkchicago.com/cash. sportstalkchicago.com/cash. If you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Talk Chicago, here with John Zagluel, and we are back and ready for today's special guest. He's a Bulls insider at Stadium and the host of the Sharpshooters podcast. Please welcome Mark Schanowski to the program. Mark, it's great to have you on. How are you?
I'm great, John. How about yourself?
I'm doing great. Thanks for being here. Were you expecting this type of start for the Bulls?
Well, it was hard to say. Obviously, I have a brand new front office, a brand new coaching staff. The roster stayed pretty much the same, but I was very curious to see what Billy Donovan would do to try to tailor the offense to the talents of some of the guys that he had on the team. And I think to this point, he's done a really good job. They rank in the top 10 in the NBA offensively. They've done a good job of distributing the ball. They shot the three pretty well, and I think scoring points has been a good surprise. But defensively, they have a lot of issues. And I think you see that with a lot of young teams where their communication on defense isn't always the best. And they rank near the bottom of the league in defensive efficiency. So if they can pull up that defense, I think they can be competitive throughout the year. But, you know, it still is in the, I would say, relatively early stages of the rebuild. We've kind of handed it off to a new front office, but there's still a lot of work to be done.
Is there a difference that you see from this year compared to last year when you watch games?
Yeah, they're more fun to watch. There's no question about it, because last year their offense was so paralyzed by analytics. Jim Boylan really took a deep dive into the analytics pool and basically was telling his guys not to shoot the mid-range. Now, the Bulls aren't the only team that are discouraging players from shooting shots, jumpers inside the three-point line, but they took it to a ridiculous extent where you had Wendell Carter Jr. not even looking at the basket when he'd catch the ball in the mid post because he knew he wasn't supposed to shoot that. And I think that, you know, some of the guys, Zach LaVine talked about the fact that, you know, he felt a little bit stifled offensively because he wasn't supposed to shoot mid-range jumpers. And I think when you have absolutes in any kind of system, it's going to cause some problems. Now I think the ball, as I mentioned, is moving better. You're seeing guys playing freely. You're seeing Thad Young being used a lot more wisely in terms of being able to post up and using him as a passer in the post. Just a lot of good things on the offense, and I think that's been the most encouraging thing that I've seen through the first 17 games this year.
Mark Schanowski here on Sports Talk Chicago. Mark, what's been your evaluation of Zach LaVine so far?
I think he's been really good. I think he's improved. I know that he's talked repeatedly over the last several years about how important it is to win some games because all the individual honors that he's pursuing in terms of all-star game appearances and all NBA recognition, all those things are tied to being part of a winning team. And I think that he probably at some point had a sit down with Arturis Karnišević and Billy Donovan, and they told him, listen, if you want to be a big part, if you want to be either the best or second best player on a team that can do something in the playoffs, you have to change your game a little bit. You have to be more focused on the defensive end. You have to be more of a distributor at times, and you have to see the floor better in late game situations. He still needs some growth in late games. We've seen him take some very difficult shots in close games in the final minute. I think he's, you know, working to improve in that area. He kind of got hit by the turnover bug in these last two losses when they got blown out by the Lakers and Celtics. I believe he had like 13 turnovers in the two games, and you can't have that. But, you know, he's committed to trying to improve his game. You know, he ranks in the top 10 in NBA scoring, and I think he's been more efficient in terms of his shot selection. So I've seen growth, but, you know, as I mentioned, there's still a lot of moving pieces around him. And I know the Bulls would like to find a way, like all teams would, to find a number one superstar to pair with Zach, but that's much easier said than done.
How concerning are the turnovers to you? Could that be a persisting problem moving forward, or do you think eventually he corrects it?
Well, I think part of it is that Coby White has struggled in recent games. Coby turned his ankle about 2 weeks ago. I don't know if that's part of the reason why he's been bothered. His game's been off a little bit, but in recent games, we've seen that Billy Donovan has gone away from Coby White. He sat for long stretches of games, and they go with Tomas Satoransky in the lineup with some of their veterans, and then Zach takes on a lot of the ball-handling responsibilities. So because of the fact he's the one that's bringing the ball up court and he's the one initiating the offense, I think that's led to more turnovers. But especially in the game against Boston, he had some really careless turnovers where he just wasn't focused and he threw the ball out of bounds, and you just can't live with those types of mistakes.
What's your response to those who say LaVine isn't a superstar, the Bulls should trade him?
Yeah, I understand the argument, especially given the fact that he's going to be up for a contract in a year and a half, and he's going to be looking for a max deal. And I'm sure there is a segment of the fan base that said, why would you hand Zach LaVine a $30 to $35 million a year contract when he's never been part of a winning basketball team? Those are tough decisions for the front office, because when you look at him, he's really not much different than Bradley Beal, you know, a guy who's a high volume scorer who's, you know, other parts of his game are sometimes lacking. And yet Bradley Beal, when I see some of the trade rumors out there for him, I'm hearing multiple first round draft picks, pick swaps and young players. And with Zach LaVine, it's kind of like, well, maybe we can get a first-round draft pick for him. I think that if you're going to trade LaVine, you better make sure you get a good package back. I'm a Zach LaVine fan. I think he's a very good player. I think he scores with ease, which is so important in today's NBA game. I think he would be an excellent number two or a 1B kind of player on a winning team. And, you know, it is a tough decision. I understand the arguments on both sides, but I'm in the camp of try to keep Zach and explore other ways to find that other star to go with him.
Does he have the potential to be a 1A or to be a straight-up number one at some point?
Well, that's difficult to say. You know, there aren't many championship teams that have been built around shooting guards. You know, we saw it, of course, with the Bulls with Michael Jordan. We saw it with Kobe Bryant in Los Angeles. You know, now we're seeing it more with the wing perimeter guy has been the key to championship teams in terms of LeBron James and Kevin Durant and Kawhi Leonard. And the Bulls right now don't have that type of player. It's not easy to get one of those guys. And, you know, everyone's looking at the 2021 free agent class as a possibility for the Bulls to have cap space and maybe pursue one of the elite free agents. But you saw Giannis re-sign in Milwaukee. You saw Paul George sign an extension with the Clippers. There's no way Kawhi Leonard is leaving Southern California after working that hard to get there. I just don't see an easy path in free agency. I think the Bulls are going to be vigilant in terms of who is the next unhappy superstar to emerge, and maybe they get involved in that trade market, because as we speak, they have all their first-round draft picks, and they have a number of young players on favorable contracts. I think they could be a player in any trade discussion that emerges in the coming years. It's just a question of which young player or veteran becomes unhappy in his current situation and demands a trade.
Who do you think would be a perfect fit right now, assuming anybody was available?
I'd love to get Luka, but there's no way that Dallas is going to let him go. You know, it's very hard to predict who's going to become unhappy. You know, what usually ends up, the curve on this usually is you get a young player who ascends to all-star status, and then he becomes unhappy either with his role in the offense, with the coaching situation, or, you know, the fact that he isn't featured as much. And, you know, it's very hard to predict, you know, who that player might be. You know, could it be a guy like Devin Booker in Phoenix who gets tired of all the losing? It's just hard to say which young player is going to come up to the end of his rookie extension and say, you know, I'm not happy here and I want to get moved. You'd like to see a guy who is a playmaker from the small forward position. As I mentioned, those are the guys that have been kind of the keystones of winning championships. You know, we saw the Celtics the other night with Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. Obviously, they're not going to make those guys available. Either one of those guys would be great fits on the Bulls. You know, we'll just have to see if some star-level player becomes available in the coming years.
Mark Schanowski here on Sports Talk Chicago. Mark, what about Lauri Markkanen? What do you think about him so far this year?
I think he's made an effort to try to become more versatile on the offensive end. You know, he was kind of a stationary three-point shooter, as I mentioned, in the Boylan offense last year, where they told him just stand out beyond the three-point line and wait for the ball to come to you. And I think that really retarded his progress a little bit. This year, Billy's got him on the move. He's catching the ball off screens and getting the basket. His free throw rate was pretty good early in the year. That's dropped off a little bit in recent weeks. But, I've seen some good things on the offensive end. I've always felt he was an underrated defensive rebounder. At 7'1", he's a good athlete. You know, they've got the same conundrum with Lowry as they do with Zach LaVine. His agent's going to be looking for big money when he hits restricted free agency this year. Obviously, he's not worth a max contract, but do you want to pay Lauri Markkanen $20 million a season, which I'm sure is what his agent's going to be asking after this year? I'm of the mind now, because of the fact that the free agent market has dried up for this summer. You know, it's difficult to project it going 2, 3, 4 years away from now. I think what you're almost going to have to do is re-sign Lowry or match an offer sheet from some team, and then just know that if he doesn't progress to the level that you're happy with, you can use that $20 million salary slot potentially in a trade for a max level player down the road. I wouldn't just let Lowry walk and go, well, we're not going to pay him 20. We only think he's worth 15. It's easy to say, it's not my money. But I think in today's NBA, you know, the old formula was, you know, create cap space when you're a bad team. I'm saying, use your high lottery picks to add young players, create cap space, and hopefully the young guys improve enough to the point where a superstar player is willing to jump on. That's what happened in Brooklyn, where they developed some of their young guys and they got the superstar duo of Durant and Irving. And I think that's the formula that a lot of teams were looking at. But now, with so many of these star players under contract and free agency not looking that appealing in the next couple of years, I think that you need players in different salary slots that you can use to combine them in trades. And I think the Bulls right now are in position to make a deal. It's just a question of who will Arturas and Mark Eversley identify as a guy who, A, could be available, and B, would be a good fit with their current roster.
Has Lauri, based on performance this year, made a good case to be extended, though?
Yeah, I mean, you could probably say that he really hasn't lived up to expectations as the number 7 pick in the draft, who really flashed some great things in his second year, particularly that month of February, where he averaged like 26 points and 12 rebounds a game and did it for an extended period. Yeah, I think that you could say that he hasn't, that development curve hasn't continued upwards like a lot of Bulls fans and Bulls front office officials had hoped. I'm sure that they're taking a hard look at it, and they're trying to decide what this team is going to look like in 1, 2, or 3 years. There was a very interesting quote from Billy Donovan after the one-sided loss to the Celtics on Monday night. He was asked about the rebuilding situation and where things stand, and he said, before you win, there's always a lot of suffering. And you know, that led me to believe that he knows what he signed up for. You know, he said repeatedly that one of the things that attracted him about this job is that Arturis Karnishevas said that he wanted him to be a partner in building this thing. And I think they're looking long-term. I know Bulls fans don't want to hear that because, you know, there's been a lot of losing and a lot of suffering over the last few years. But you will look at so many young players on the roster. You know, they've had three number seven overall picks and then Patrick Williams, the number four overall pick. It takes time to develop these guys. And I think that potentially by the trade deadline this year, or certainly by this coming summer, they're going to take a hard look at the roster, and I would anticipate major changes to this team before the 21-22 season.
What kind of major changes, if any, or do you have an idea?
I think several guys will be moved because I think Arturis will have had either a half season or an entire season to evaluate how they fit. The only guy they're really committed to, I think, is Patrick Williams. I mean, that was their draft pick, the number four overall pick. The only guy they added in free agency was Garrett Temple, and he's an older player who certainly isn't part of their long-term vision. So I would think that guys like Lauri Markkanen, who you mentioned, Zach LaVine, Wendell Carter Jr., and even Coby White, they'll take a hard look at, because the consensus around the league really is that Kobe's not a point guard, that he's more of a scoring guard, and that, you know, a lot of executives around the league feel like the Bulls will have to choose between which one you want to focus your offense around and trade the other. So I think there could be two or three players that are moved before they get to training camp next September.
Has Patrick Williams played up to par so far?
I thought he was great the first 10 games, and I think I don't want to say he hit the rookie wall, but I think he's some teams have adjusted to him, and I think that there are some parts of his game that need to improve. You know, he's a reluctant shooter, which you worry about because that's what we've seen with Wendell Carter Jr. to this point. He only wants to shoot it when he's wide open. Occasionally we'll see him make a quick dribble move off a screen and take that mid-range jumper. But when he catches the ball, when he's open on the perimeter, he just doesn't want to seem to shoot it, doesn't want to pull the trigger. And he's a young kid. He's 19. I'm not going to make any broad, sweeping conclusions about him. I'd like to see him to be more aggressive on the offensive end. In the Boston game, he picked up two quick fouls, went to the bench, and then in the second half, Billy Donovan decided he was going to try to ride his veterans to keep the game competitive, and Williams really didn't play much. So the last few games, he struggled a little bit. There were some positive signs early, and like most rookies, especially a 19-year-old who didn't even start on his college team, there are going to be some ups and downs. But he has the physical traits to become a very good player. I'm encouraged by what I've seen overall, and I think that, you know, when you look back, you know, speaking of Boston, remember when they took Jaylen Brown with the fourth pick out of Cal when he had kind of a, you know, a so-so year at Cal, and then he applied for the draft, and everyone knew he was a great physical talent, but he didn't do a whole lot as a rookie with the Celtics, but now he's an all-star level player. He improved every year in the league, and I'm sure we're going to see similar things with Patrick Williams, where he's going to add more and more to his game as each year goes. You know, he's playing as a 19-year-old rookie on a team that does have some veterans on it now, and I think that right now he knows that Zach LaVine is the future player on offense, and I think that being a starter on a team that has some guys who are going to need the ball, he just wants to play a support role. And sometimes you can take that to the degree where, you know, you're just not contributing a lot. And he's got to find the perfect medium in that, and I think he will.
What's the one thing that really excites you about him?
I just his physical potential. You know, he's 6'8", 225. LeBron James, when they met the first time out in Los Angeles, talked about the fact that he had Kawhi Leonard-like hands. And, you know, people say, well, who cares if you have big hands? Well, that can allow you to do a lot of things in terms of on the offensive end, palming the ball, being able to dunk over people, being able to score in a variety of ways in the paint. And I think as he gets more confidence in his overall offensive game, you're going to see him do some really special things in terms of attacking the goal, dunking the ball over big players, you know, at the rim. And I think he's going to be a very, very exciting offensive player. I think that's something, you know, people have talked about his defense. He's been asked to guard so many of the stars of the league in terms of LeBron and Kawhi and Giannis. And you know, he struggled at times in those defensive matchups, as you would expect. But he has the physical traits as a 19-year-old rookie that you think, wow, in a year or two, this guy could be really a good player on both ends of the court. And I think that's why the Bulls decided to draft him or some other guys that they liked at that number four pick.
More to come with Mark Schanowski in just a moment. Stay tuned. This is Sports Talk Chicago. Janowski, still here on Sports Talk Chicago. Mark, a few more questions before we finish up. First off, the new job at Stadium, how'd it come up?
Well, my good friend Joe Riley is the executive producer of the Stadium Show that runs at 5:30 on weeknights on the Marquee Sports Network. A lot of people probably aren't aware what's going on at Marquee because I think that they feel like it's just the Cubs station. We're just going to get Cubs reruns in the off season and games and talk shows during the season. But they do have some programming that that they surround the games with, both in season and out. And one of the shows that they added about 9 months or so ago it's called The Stadium. It's hosted by Michael Kim, and it's a show that's very similar to the show I used to host with Pat Boyle over at what was then Comcast Sportsnet, called Sportsnet Central. And you know, they wrap up all the local teams. They do long segments on all the local professional teams, and what they do is they bring in analysts to discuss the Bulls, in my case, or the Blackhawks, White Sox, Cubs, and Bears, and they spend, you know, several minutes on each team, which is great for the local sports fan. So, you know, I encourage people who haven't seen it yet, check it out. It's on the Marquee Sports Network at 5:30. And Joe, I talked to him just after the holidays, and we just kind of caught up on what was going on in our lives. And, you know, I mentioned to him that if you ever need some help with Bulls, I'm available. And he said, how about tomorrow? So that's kind of the way it happened. And that's the way things kind of work in our business. You know, sometimes you're doing very little or you're between jobs for a while, and then something kind of comes up out of nowhere. And that was the case for this. They have a number of people they use in that Bulls analyst role. Bill Wennington is their number one guy. They also use Shams Charania when national stories break. And, you know, I just fill in as an analyst once or twice a week. I'll be doing the show tonight with Michael, and it's been a lot of fun. It's been fun being back in a television format and given a chance to express my views on the Bulls and what's going on around the league. So, you know, I'm very thankful for that opportunity, and it's been a lot of fun.
And the new podcast with Stacey King, how's that going too?
That has been a blast. I would encourage everybody to check it out. I mean, it's more than just Stacey talking about the Bulls. And I think that's one thing that, you know, everyone who's watched Bulls games knows that Stacey's personality is larger than life, and he loves all sports. He loves movies. He loves the UFC. You know, I mean, we talk about all of it. And Stacey's one of the great storytellers. You know, when Bulls games are going bad over the last couple of years, you know, Stacey would try to keep them entertaining by telling stories about a lot of different things. And this podcast brings out his storytelling ability, and we spray to all fields. You know, we've had some great guests. We've had some of his former teammates to talk about the Bulls championship runs, the first three-peat. We've had, you know, great segments about the Last Dance documentary. And, you know, check it out. It's on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. It's called Gimme the Hot Sauce. Easy to find, and it's a lot of fun. So I hope people will check it out.
What's been the funniest moment on the podcast so far?
Well, there's really too many to quantify. But, I mean, it's just Stacey telling stories about his growing up in Oklahoma and some of the experiences he had. You know, he told a hilarious story about getting involved in a playground fight. You know, it sounds like, you know, it's a violent thing, but it's more the humor of how he got caught up in it. You know, he talks about his love for different movies and TV shows, and he's such an engaging storyteller that just about any topic he goes into turns into something where, you know, we're just laughing out loud and just trying to keep the show on the rails. So it's kind of a fun joyride, and I think if people check it out, you'll get your NBA information. I mean, we always update the Bulls at the top, what's going on with the team, his perspective on things and different topics around the league. But then we just kind of unplug Stacey and let him go wild, and it's been a lot of fun. I mean, he's got so many funny life experiences and his way of engaging not only me, but the people who are listening. And I know the people who have listened to it have said, you know, I find myself laughing out loud repeatedly throughout the show. And that's always a good review.
And Mark, before we finish up today, last question, your favorite Chicago sports memory, what is it?
Well, there've been so many of them. You know, I mean, there's different categories in terms of things that I was actually covering and things that I was able to witness. And, you know, I would say just because of the sheer historical impact of it, it has to be the Cubs winning the World Series. That day I was in the studio. Obviously I wasn't in Cleveland for the big win, but I was on set waiting to go on, you know, watching that tenth inning, And, you know, just the joy when you saw the Cubs win after 108 years and the reactions of people throughout Chicago. And my good friend David Kaplan, who was hosting the postgame show, you know, literally almost in tears because he's such a huge Cubs fan. Just seeing the way that impacted people around the city for generations of Cub fans, you know, who knew their fathers and grandfathers who had passed, loving the Cubs and wanting to one day see that championship and to see it finally come true. That was something that was so special. My son is also a big Cubs fan, and he was overjoyed about it. So just from so many different angles, that had to be the biggest sports story I was involved with and the one that I'll always remember.
Well, Mark, thank you so much for joining me. Always a pleasure to talk Bulls with you. And best wishes now with Stadium, and give me the hot sauce and sharpshooters. Really enjoy your content. Thanks for coming on.
John, it was a lot of fun. Look forward to doing it again soon.
Great talk there with Mark Schanowski, and that'll do it for us today here on Sports Talk Chicago. Big thank you to Mark Schanowski himself, Matt Dubiel, WCKG, Jim DeTaub, and to Marlboro Entertainment for making this show a success. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at John Z Sports and on Facebook at John Zagluo. And if you want to listen to this show at any time in podcast form, search up Sports Talk Chicago on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and SportsTalkChicago.com. Another great show comes your way tomorrow. Thank you so much for listening. Until then, stay safe, and so long, everyone.
No! No!
Never the turn!